As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome to Front End Nationwide, The Athletic, dedicated Blue Jackets podcast. Aaron Fortson with you on a Thursday afternoon. It is sunny. It is bright. It is the hockey day in Central Ohio. Blue Jackets with a back-to-back against the New York Rangers. You know how this went. They beat the Rangers in Nationwide on Sunday, 4-2. Lost to the Rangers last night at Madison Square Garden, 4-1. Gave up two empty net goals in the final minute in an otherwise very close game. The boys have played pretty well the last couple of games. I think Pascal Vincent, maybe he's trying to convince himself, but he sees big-time progress and wonders if maybe they've started to turn a corner here. I'll let you be the judge of that. Blue Jackets tonight against the Carolina Hurricanes. Not an easy three-game stretch here. Rangers, Hurricanes. The Blue Jackets then will play at Chicago on Saturday, and then it gets tough again. Vegas, at Pittsburgh, Edmonton, Nashville. The games are coming fast and furious now after a rather slow pace for a month or so there. Featured today on this episode is Scott Wheeler, the Athletic's national reporter, covers the NHL draft and prospects. And he has done his yearly venture through the NHL's prospects and rank them by team. The Blue Jackets, the timing of this podcast is rather obvious. Wheels had the Blue Jackets at number 3 on the list. Published just yesterday. I encourage you to go look at that if you haven't already. Lots of comments on there, so I know lots of people have seen it. And Scott will be with us in just a moment. You can ask him about any of the Blue Jackets prospects, really any prospect from around the league, if you're so inclined. Let me go through his list here. Again, he had the Blue Jackets ranked 3rd in the rankings this year, and that list is on the website. If you look on the Blue Jackets page, it's still fairly high up because it was just published yesterday. Now, by his criteria, there's no Fantilli because he went straight to the NHL and he's considered an NHL player. There's no Marchenko or Voronkov as they're both in the NHL. But Kent Johnson lands back on the list because he did spend some time in the American Hockey League and could again. So, and despite that, despite those players no longer being part of it, or as they say in the prospects world, having graduated, the Blue Jackets still rank 3rd in the league. Only Detroit and Buffalo are higher. Per Scott Wheeler, the number 1 prospect is Kent Johnson. Number 2 prospect is David Yurecek. Maybe I should have gone the other order to build up a little drama here. Number 3 is Denton Mateychuk. 4, Jordan Dumais. And number 5, Gavin Brindley. So those are all names you're certainly most likely familiar with. And we will bring Scott in here momentarily, and we'll get chatting. I want to ask him about some of the names that are maybe lower on the list, too. As you probably know, I'm a big Malatesta guy. I don't think Jet Greaves is on the list at all, too. Curious to get his thoughts on him. So, yeah. And Wheels is great at this. I would imagine if I did just put in the work that he did, going through almost 500 prospects, and I mean, across all 30 teams, having gone through this, I'm sure he's more than a little fried right now. This is his big event of the year. Let's see, what else we got cooking? John Davidson was in Cleveland last night. He's doing his own prospect search, if you will. He was in Cleveland to watch the Monsters play. They won in overtime. Trey Fix-Wolanski, the winner. I'll tell you one of the things that'll be interesting about the trade deadline, which is now 8 days away, will be what moves the Blue Jackets make, absolutely, but also who they clear through to the AHL to play in the postseason. I spoke to Adam Fantilli the other day, asked him if there's been any discussion about him possibly going to Cleveland to play once his season is over. And he said that conversation has not been had. So I believe him. We'll take him at his word. But I would imagine that's something that the Blue Jackets have to be considering. He will miss about a month, month and a half. By the time he's back from the calf injury, spoke with Pascal Vincent earlier this week, and he said that he is still on pace to play at some point this season. So Fantilli should be back. He's not skating, still walking with a limp, so I do think he's a little ways off. All right, we're bringing Scott Wheeler into the chat. Here, Scott, you got me there? Are you on the line?
I do. Thanks for having me.
Oh, right. Yeah, well, thanks for joining us. You've been a busy man. What are these days like when I'm not saying your work is done because the season's not done, the draft isn't here and over yet, but a big chunk of your undertaking every year is now behind you. Did you enjoy a bottle of wine or perhaps a cigar the other night?
Yeah, oddly enough, yesterday was my birthday, and it was actually sort of the first day off I've had since before the World Juniors, which is going back to December 24th, I guess. So more than 2 months ago at this point. It's been this is my, as far as your question, this is my busiest stretch of the year, yeah. No question. It's a grind to get through all 32 of them with the proper sort of detail and nuance and the reporting and all of it. So I'm happy that it's over. I was actually enjoying a glass of wine last night when I got a photo from my wife of a tree that had fallen on our property here. So I was lucky that I was out with the car at the time, because had the car been in the driveway, it probably would have been a nice insurance claim for us. Wow. So we got a little bit lucky with where it fell, but we've actually got people from the town out in front of me here. I may have to periodically jump off here. I think they may knock on my door at some point to ask me sort of what they need to do here. So a bit of a whirlwind over the last couple of hours, but
literally
getting it all sorted, but we're good to go.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, happy birthday from all of us here in Columbus. Glad to have you on the pod. I know people here were very excited to see where the Blue Jackets would land, because if we don't have a lot right now here in Columbus with the hockey team, but there is hope for the future here for sure.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to ask you about before we get rolling into the prospects is just a thought on Jarmo Kekäläinen. And lots of GMs come up through the scouting ranks, or at least have that on their profile when they emerge in the big seats in the NHL. But Jarmo Kekäläinen is a scout through and through, never stopped being a scout.
Yeah,
I'm sure you had tons of interactions with Jarmo through the years, both with the Blues and the Blue Jackets, perhaps as far back as Ottawa. Just your thoughts on the man. I don't think anyone was surprised to see it come to this. But your thoughts on your interactions with him through the years, and where you, how you sort of place him in the world of NHL GMs.
Yeah, my perspective is obviously sort of exclusively coming from the perspective of how did he do at the draft. And I think when you look back at it from that perspective, you have to, at least at the last sort of 10 years or so, you have to look back on it favorably. I mean, this is a man who passed on Jesse Puljujärvi when that wasn't the sort of believed to be choice at the time. This is a guy who I think took some risks, less so on David Yurecek, but Kent Johnson wasn't everybody's cup of tea. And as you know, I'm still a big, big believer in Kent. I think once he starts going from 13, 14 minutes a night to 16, 17, 18 minutes a night eventually, that you're going to see top of the lineup production from him. I do think that's going to come. Taking him at five did come with a little bit of risk, and I think it will pay off in the long run. I liked the Denton Mateychuk pick. You go back to even last year, Fantilli, Brindley, I think those are going to look favorable long-term. Obviously, Fantilli was a bit of a no-brainer, but Brindley, I think, was a player that, again, not everybody would have taken Gavin Brindley in that range. Even back to Yegor Chinnikov, a sort of out of the blue pick. Yegor has become an NHL player here and has surprised some people. They did well. There were a couple of picks over the years that I didn't love. I didn't love the selection. This is going way back, but back in 2018, I didn't love the selection of Liam Foudy. And Liam's obviously just had a tough time becoming more than just this, the skater that we all know he is. Right. But I mean, if you're nitpicking at one first round pick over the course of several years, that's not exactly an indictment of the job that he did. Right. So, even Kirill Marchenko in the second round, like they did a good job. I'm not sure whether it was sort of home run out of the ballpark track record at the draft, but I think he can stand on his track record at the draft at the very least as something that him and his amateur scouting group did a good job with. And I know a few of the amateur scouts in that department pretty well, and they're all smart people. So I do have a lot of respect for that group. As far as Yarmo, only had a couple of interactions with him over the years. I believe he actually got my phone number from you way back when and gave me a call when I was critical, a little bit more critical of the pool then than I am now. But I think that was just a part. That's a part of his identity. He gave me a call and was sort of challenged me on a couple of things once upon a time, right, a few years ago. And I think that was mostly also him standing up for his guys. It was him standing up for his scouting department and guys he really believed in his amateur scouting department. So I think that was also a part of his DNA. Not that he was super combative, but he was always friendly to me when I would run into him around the rink in the aftermath of that. So it wasn't like he held a grudge or anything. Sure. But yeah, we had a couple conversations like that over the years where it was just sort of going back and forth and me standing my ground on evaluations and him standing up for some of the choices that they've made and that kind of a thing. And then as fate would have it, I've been much more complimentary of that group over the last few years. As I mentioned, I thought they did a good job. They've done a good job of late.
And you probably got fewer phone calls on that end, eh?
Yeah, fewer phone calls when they started to appear second and third on the list. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. So, folks, if you're listening, you can chime in with your questions. We're going to limit it to text messages here because the stage is currently occupied by Scott Wheeler. So send some in. We've got a bunch already. We're going to go till about 1:45. Maybe we'll push it a little bit past that if we can do it. Let's get rolling here, though. Jacob S. says, "Hey, Scott, thanks for your excellent prospect coverage. I want to ask about Denton Mateychuk. I saw his skating up close at development camp and was mesmerized by how light he was on his feet. This made me realize I don't have the vocabulary to describe a good skater. What do you look for in a prospect skating, and what makes Mateychuk specifically a plus-level skater?"
Oh, that's a good question. I'll start with the theoretical first. I think there are, first of all, very different things for forwards and defensemen. Obviously, there's the backwards part of skating as a defenseman, but also just a balance. Their postures are a little bit different. The lies of their, if anybody's ever had their skates profiled, the lies of their skates and the lies of their blades sit back on their heels more than they do for forwards. They have to be upright. So there's a balance and posture, and it's a much more mechanical skating backwards than it is forwards. There are all sorts of ways to skate forwards. There are people who are very sloppy forward skaters who can really fly down the ice just from pure power and athleticism and sort of quick twitch, that sort of quick twitch sprinting mechanics that some players have. There are others who just do it with edges. When you're a defenseman, it's very different. You need it. A lot of it comes down to balance, posture, certainly your edge work and your ability to cross over, not just walking the line in the offensive zone, but your ability to maintain gaps, to close gaps, to step up and close gaps quickly, to recover if you've made a mistake in your gap control, all of those things. So I think specifically with Denton, what stands out is obviously at 5'11", A, you have to be mobile. There aren't many poor skating 5'11" defensemen in today's NHL. There aren't many 5'11" defensemen in today's NHL, period. I think part of what is going to make Denton a full-time top six, maybe even second pairing NHL defenseman is his ability to recover, that sort of recovery that I sort of talked about. His footwork is just so smooth and polished. He's never catching an edge or stumbling over his feet or sort of turning through his pivots and getting caught flat-footed if he has to turn back and skate forwards to a chipped-in puck or that kind of a thing. It's all just very smooth, very balanced. The mechanics are there. The edge work is there. And then on top of it, I think he's a good athlete. You run into him around the rink, you realize that he's a pretty fit kid. So there's that piece of the puzzle that's there. There's just a lot of boxes. He's for a 5'11" defenseman is just a really, really impressive skater, impressive three-way sort of three zone player, if you will. Obviously the offensive gifts would have carried him, but he's a captain in that league and he's been a leader with Hockey Canada, and he's got a ton of personalities, a bit of a character as a kid, and he defends really, really hard and competitive for his size. He's not a super physical kid, but he's in the battle. He engages. He's not shy. There's a lot to like that way. I think he's going to be able to more than hold his own defensively for a player his size, which is a huge positive and a huge notch in his belt. And then he's got to have, and I think he does have, but he's got to have power play upside at that height. You almost always have to be that kind of a guy as well. And I think he has that element. He's creative. He sees the ice really well. He's active off the line. He's got a good enough shot. He can definitely manage the puck. There's a lot of sort of poise and calm and maturity. He sort of looks like a pro out there already at a young age. And this is a kid who's been a top defender for three seasons in the WHL. And typically you see the sort of two seasons as a top player before you graduate. He was already a top player in his draft year. So he plays big minutes. He plays in all situations. I'm not sure whether he's going to be a penalty killer in the NHL, but I think he's going to be a really good 5-on-5 guy who can play the power play for sure.
So consistent. Randy O says, Scott Wheeler's comments on KJ, I think he's meaning Kent Johnson, indicate he can flourish under the right surroundings, which included coaching. Can you expand on that comment? I think this is referring to Johnson's ice time, 1332, through 42 games, 12th or 13th on the team among forwards. Still above Voronkov. I guess there's a larger question here too, but specific to Johnson, your thoughts on his ice time is how he's being used by Pascal Vincent and staff.
Yeah, it's a balancing act, right? Because Pascal came in, he wanted to establish a culture, and I spoke with members of the organization about sort of the decision to send him in November down to the AHL, and the sense I got from those conversations were that they didn't love his training camp and the sort of the consistency of his training camp, not just in games, but also in practices. And so I understand that. On one hand, you've got to hold these kids accountable, they've got to earn it, all of that. But eventually, with a player of his caliber, it's not a character concern. The one thing they all insisted to me, I spoke with like three different members of the organization, scouting department, parts of management there. The one thing they all insisted was not a character thing, not a habits thing, hard worker, all of those things, just that he maybe viewed it like it was his job. And they wanted to sort of make everybody earn it. And that included a player of his caliber. I think the danger with that is if that happens for too long and you can't sort of put him in a position to succeed and maybe give him something that he hasn't earned, suddenly you can start to impact a player's development. And I think with him, the priority has to be on him being, if not a first line player, then at least a second line player for the team long term. When they're a good team, he needs to be on PP1. He needs to be getting 15, 16, 17 minutes minimum. Doesn't mean he has to be a 20-minute a night guy. He's probably not going to be that kind of a guy just because of his two-way play and sort of how skinny he is. And it's hard to be a big sort of matchup guy in that kind of a frame and the way that he plays and all of that. But he needs to be playing more than he does, and it needs to be a priority for them. Maybe even if he hasn't earned it, that's kind of where I'm at it on Kent at this point.
Yeah.
Suddenly he starts to play more, and then he starts to play better, and he gets more touches, and he's playing with more talented players. And then he flourishes, and then you're wondering, okay, now he has earned it. And that doesn't mean you have to give him cookies, but I do think they need to give him a long run, long extended run of sort of 17 minutes a night, if you will, and see where that lands him, and see whether he can become that sort of 50 to 70 point player that they're going to need him to be.
Especially in a season like this that has been essentially not meaningful in terms of the playoffs for many months now. Like, what else are you getting out of these final 30 games of the season? Thanks for the question there. We go to Ryan now, who says, do you have the sense that the Blue Jackets are going to be held back from the playoffs, even as all the young skaters blossom because of the goaltending situation? Could the young Russian be the answer?
It's obviously a position that they're going to have to address at some point. I don't think that Tarasov is likely the answer. I think part of the reason I got that call once upon a time from Yarmo was because he was a big believer in Tarasov, and I was just a little bit lower on him. I still am. I think he's probably a fine number two. I don't think he's going to be a number one goalie. Now, there aren't many number one goalies in the NHL these days. You can probably count them on one hand, maybe two hands. Increasingly, we're seeing teams play in tandems, and there's no Roberto Luongo, Marc-Andre Fleury, Henrik Lundqvist, Tim Thomas, Jonathan Quick, like that. Those glory days of the mid-2000s where there were 15 of those guys, Carey Price, you go down the list, Thomas Bokun. There just isn't that number of quality goaltenders anymore. And part of that's because we've lost some checking lines around the league, and there's more skill up and down lineups, and the goons are gone, and scoring is up. And so all of that has impacted, I think, save percentages. But I think that they don't have within the organization, whether it's Tarasov, or I don't know whether the question was even asking about Ivanov, the 5'11" Russian. That question might have been about him. If the question is in terms of Ivanov, I like him. I think he's going to maybe surprise some people. He's obviously 5'11", 160, 170 pounds. That's tough. There are goalies who are starting to do that. Obviously, UC Saros is the big name, but Dustin Wolf is coming in Calgary. Devin Levi is coming in Calgary. I have faith that both of those kids are going to be very, very good NHL goalies. Ivanov's going to have to sort of build the track record, I think, that Dustin Wolf and Devin Levi built. Dustin Wolf and Devin Levi didn't do it for 1 or 2 years, what Ivanov has done in the KHL this year, which has been extremely impressive. They did it for like 4 or 5 consecutive years before teams believed in them. So, Ivanov, it's just going to require patience. Like, he should stay over there, spend multiple more years in the KHL doing what he's done this year. He's been excellent for 2 different KHL teams, obviously. But it's going to take sort of building a repertoire into his 22, 23, 24 years old before I think it's going to be a sort of a look in the AHL situation, right? So I like him a lot, though. Like, I've got next week, we'll have my drafted prospects rankings, which always follow these pool rankings. They're going to be coming out at The Athletic, and he's going to be just as a sort of warning to everybody. He's going to be sort of in the mix on the goalie list. So I'm a fan. He's quick. He's really athletic. He's controlled. You have to be really controlled when you're a smaller goalie. Otherwise you can lose your net with all of the movement. They have to move a lot more than bigger goalies, right? So you can really lose your net and start to swim at that size. But he's really controlled. He stays between his posts. His angles are good. There's a lot to like there.
Yeah. Great. Thanks for the question, Ryan. We go to Jonathan B, who says, Scott, thanks for all of your amazing work. My question surrounds Jordan Dumais. You seem to be a little higher on him than other scouts. What knocks on his game? Is it just his size / speed? Do they factor more than you? And what pros do you weigh more than they do?
Yeah, I've had this conversation with all sorts of people around the NHL about him and about Andrew Kristall, two players that I've sort of stuck my neck out on that have similar profiles, similar size. They're both, it's hard. When you're a winger, A, teams are more and more valuing centers and D in terms of the draft. And when you're a 5'8", 5'9" winger who's got a hitch in his stride and can look a little wonky skating out there, there are teams that just will, by default, not take you. I think part of what has allowed me to believe in Jordan over the years, well, there's a few things. A, the statistical profile, he would be the exception, not the rule. Even at his height, even as a winger, even with his skating, he would be the exception, not the rule, if he didn't make it with a statistical profile like he does. Like, we're talking about one of the 10 most productive players in the CHL since the turn of the century. This is and every single other player on that list played in the NHL and was very good in the NHL. So the statistical profile is almost impossible to ignore. He's the kid who was going to have back-to-back 140-point seasons if he didn't have his procedures done after the World Juniors on his abdomen and on his hips. Health is the big question, I think, at this point. But as far as the actual statistic, beyond the statistical piece, why I believe in him, A, incredibly, incredibly smart player, a rare player who can play at his own pace with the puck and still find ways to work his way in small area games, to take advantage of defenders, to play pucks into spint, talented player, like very high end in all of those ways. And I think those tools are high end enough that it should work. And then on top of that, I do think the one thing that I've differed from scouts on is some scouts had concerns about his play off the puck. He doesn't burn a lot of energy. He's not chasing it all the time. So it can look, because he's standing around and he's not sort of using his energy all the time, it can look like he's a little lazy out there. If you talk to the people in Halifax, though, they will tell you precisely the opposite. He has led that team in 3 consecutive years in takeaways. He's one of their best players. They will tell you he's one of their best players, one of their best players along the wall in terms of board play, coming up with pucks, winning pucks against bigger defensemen. But he's only going to work for a puck that he, and this is how a member of the Blue Jackets organization put it to me a couple of months ago when I asked him about Jordan. He's only going to work for the puck when he knows that he can win it. If he can't win a race, or if there's just a guy who's got a step on him, he'll play the positional game and he'll get back above the puck and he'll support the play rather than sort of constantly trying to chase it around and win a battle and put himself out of position and all of that. So, a little bit of a unique player off the puck defensively. I don't think he's going to be a liability defensively in the NHL, though. And there are some who did believe that sort of heading into his draft year that he was going to be a bit of a liability defensively. So it's just hard to ignore at this point, the talent level and the smarts in particular, plus the statistical track record. I think if you were to ask people in the Blue Jackets organization, they would say that in back-to-back Traverse City prospect tournaments, he was their best forward. Mm-hmm. People in the organization tell me that he outplayed Kirill Marchenko, who's obviously playing in the NHL right now, in both of those settings, and that Kirill actually had played quite well for himself and for his own standards. So that speaks to just how good he was, even against some pro competition. He just keeps doing it outside of the blip at the World Juniors, which I think was being impacted by his hip. Outside of the World Juniors, he's just been so good for so long. It's hard to imagine him not making it.
Yeah, he's one of the people here really, really excited about, rooting for.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Ian M. says, was Jet Greaves or Daniil Tarasov ever considered on the top prospects list? I think you already addressed Tarasov. Curious what Scott's thoughts are about both of them and the potential. Where are you at with Jet Greaves? I think currently leading the AHL in wins.
Yeah, Greaves is an interesting one. A kid who he's not really a kid anymore. He's sort of getting older, but a kid who I didn't have a ton of belief in, if I'm being honest, prior to really the last couple of seasons. And I think that's not a surprise for that. Like, I think a lot of people would echo that. When he was in Barrie, it didn't look like it was refined. Like, he just looked very raw. He made a lot of mistakes in the net. He's only 6 feet tall. He looked to me like he was going to be an ECHL goalie, not a sort of AHL goalie who's already had in his first couple of seasons at the pro level has already been called up a couple of times. His movement was always his calling card. He gets to a lot of pucks, sort of explosive post to post, really strong goaltender that way. But it was the control and the number of pucks that I thought snuck through his body. But he's been good. I mean, he's been good in Cleveland. He's obviously played well in his two or three starts in the NHL now that he's looked good in. So now suddenly I know he's 22, 23 years old at this point, but at least he's organizational depth. Like, I'm not sure whether he's ever going to be a tandem goalie, like one of your two everyday guys in the NHL. But if he's your number three or sort of has a few seasons as a number two, I think that's a very good outcome for him. Tarasov's a tricky one. I view him sort of the same way I have over the last few seasons, which is that I just don't see it in the NHL. I think too many pucks find their ways sort of through him, stoppable pucks. And that's always been a concern that I've had with Daniil. So I think they're both about in the same tier in terms of where they're at as goalies. Certainly Jet is trending in the right direction, though.
Excellent. Philip A. says, I would like to hear Scott's updated thoughts on our young Russian forwards now that they have some NHL playing time. What is the ceiling for Voronkov? Same for Sillinger. I'll throw in Marchenko there as well. Those three players, where do you see them going? It's been an interesting year, really, for all three of them.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about the two Russians, me and you, just over Slack and that kind of thing over the years. And I like both of them a lot. They're both big boys. They can both shoot the puck, protect the puck. They can play on the cycle. They can pop open in the slot and finish plays. Neither of them, I don't think, are sort of high-skilled, sort of dangling, will find the highlight reel quality players, but they can play off of players who can get them the puck. They can play the board game. They can both really shoot it. They both are competitive enough. They don't fit the sort of Russian stereotype. I'm a believer in those. Like, those two guys are just, I think, going to be solid middle six players for a good team and should have nice careers. Like, that's where they're at this point. I think that's not a foregone conclusion, but that's pretty close to one at this point, assuming good health. I think both of them will give you sort of 20 goals a year. Marchenko's got a little bit more punch as a scorer. And then who was the third kid that
Sillinger. Yeah.
Oh, yes, Cole, of course. Yeah, Cole's a... I got to know Cole really well doing a story on him ahead of the draft and sort of a little bit after going to Traverse City a couple of times and that kind of a thing. And I know Willie Desjardins with Medicine Hat and some of the coaches that he had over the years just absolutely loved him. You've gotten to know him, I'm sure, but just really charismatic kid.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very articulate and well-spoken for a hockey player, all of that. Has the physical tools. Like, he was this is a kid who at 16, 17 years old looked like a man and was sort of jacked that way. And then I know it's just been a little bit, it's taken him a little bit of time to sort of figure it out in the NHL, but I still believe in him for sure. I think the tools are there. I think he's got more individual skill than he's been able to show in the NHL so far. I do think you're going to see him score some highlight reel goals over the years with his shot and his hands. He's got good hands, not the quickest or fastest player. And I think that's held him back at times a little bit, but he'll work and he can shoot it. And I still think he's going to be just a really solid top nine player. And I don't think they're going to look back and have regrets about how high they took him. He's not going to be a star, but he's a good player. And I'm hopeful still for him that he's really going to put it all together and have a long, long career.
Yeah. He has quietly had a really good year this year. The goal scoring is not where it was as an 18-year-old, but he has really become a much better two-way player.
Yeah.
And you know what? He's put himself in a spot now where even on nights where he doesn't play well, offensively, or have a lot of opportunity offensively, he is impacting almost every game.
Yeah,
some way he's just become that player. And I think the key to it was not counting goals, not trying to live up to the 16 that he surprised with as an 18-year-old, because that really got in his head.
Yep.
Last year he's just been a better player. He just looks like more of an NHL player this year. So he seems to be back on the right track again.
He was a kid too. I won't sort of belabor it, but he was a kid too who was really impacted by the pandemic and had to go south and play in the USHL, and then had to play sort of played up a little bit earlier than I think even he probably expected. And he's just taken a pretty unique path. So I think some patience is owed there.
Yeah, for sure. Clint C says, looking at our pool and our near certain top five draft slot again this year, setting aside best player available, which 2024 players in the draft seem to complement our pool and why?
Well, it's a cliche to say because every team wants one, but I think it's the centers that you have to look at. I think they're in a good, this, which is oddly enough, this is a very good draft for defensemen. You're going to see maybe even six defensemen taken in the top 10, which would be the first time that's happened since 2012 with the Morgan Riley, Hampus Lindholm, Matt Dumba, Tyler Myers draft. You typically only see one or two D in the top 10 these days. So there are some top pairing, and if not top pairing, some top four studs in this draft. I think they're in a good spot, though, that way in terms of what's coming. Like, I think Juracek and Matejczuk are going to get there and be two big pieces of the puzzle. And I just don't see that sort of first-line center within the organization. So that's where my focus would be. Obviously, Macklin Celebrini is the guy there. But after Macklin Celebrini, there's two sort of names, maybe three, depending on who you ask, at center who follow that. The big one is out of the WHL, a kid named Berkeley Catton. A little bit on the smaller side. He's 5'11", which for a center is a little bit on the smaller side these days, 5'10", 5'11". But outside of that, has really everything that you look for in a center, and isn't even someone that scouts are polarized about. Typically with centers that size, you'll find scouts in different camps. Every scout loves Berkeley Catton, dynamic skater, works hard, wins his fair share of battles, gets up and under pucks, tons of skill, can shoot it and score. The challenge with centers that size is always, can they get to the middle and score, or are they just going to be playmakers? He can get to the middle. He goes to the front of the net. Tons, tons, tons to like there. Another one, similar vein, not this quality of skater that Catton is, but is Konsta Hellenius, who's a Finnish kid who's played to almost a point per game in the Finnish Liga this year. The Finnish Liga isn't a great pro league anymore. I actually think it's a little overrated. I think it's maybe even below the German league and the Swiss league at this point and that kind of a thing. The quality of the hockey there has taken a hit in the last decade. And they aren't spending the money that they're spending in Switzerland to get players from outside of the country kind of thing. So they don't get the Canadians and the Americans over there, or the Swedes in that league anymore, or the Russians in that league anymore. But he's a really impressive kid, 5'10", 5'11" center. He's all about smarts, less so the dynamic skill, just all about sort of thinking the game. And then the big one, the one that everybody will be after, is Caden Lindstrom, who is a 6'4" center out of Medicine Hat. 6'5", I've been told by some people. Powerful, powerful skater, can rip a puck, can bowl you over with sort of his physicality. He's the prototypical center that everybody wants. I'm not sure whether Lindstrom will be there when they draft. It'll be interesting to see where he goes. I think there's even a small chance that he might even go second or third overall in this draft and surprise some people going in front of some of the high end D. But those are sort of the three centers. If you don't win the Celebrini sweepstakes, it's probably Lindstrom and Katten in one group, and then Hellenius maybe sort of slightly behind them. But Katten and Lindstrom are top 10 picks all day. And Hellenius is kind of a fringe top 10 guy.
Imagine if Fantilli Lidstrom won two contours.
There's a lot of similarities there in terms of the way they skate, the competitiveness, their willingness there are a lot of similarities between Adam Fantilli and Caden Lindstrom. I think Fantilli's a higher end player, but if that's your 1-2 down the middle, you're in a good spot.
Carter P says, wondering as an Ottawa 67s fan, if Luca Pinelli's size is the only thing holding him back from a higher ceiling.
Yeah, I mean, he's got the rest. Again, you get that 5'9", 5'10" player, and they just have to prove it more than a 6'4", 6', even a 6'1", 6' kid has to, right? Like, there's a higher threshold that they have to meet at every level. They don't get to jump right into the NHL, even if they produce like players who do. They have to earn it in the AHL. They have to climb. Pinelli's going to be in that situation. We were talking a couple weeks ago. I'm not even sure he's going to be given, despite his play this year and the 40 goals and the captaincy in Ottawa, I'm not even sure he's going to be given sort of full-time role on the World Junior team for Team Canada next year. So as a 19-year, he'll be a 19-year-old potentially too. So, but he's a kid, obviously the scoring touch has really come this year, but the identity of his game is just the work ethic. And they've got a lot of kids like that, like Gavin Brindley. That's all Gavin Brindley does. That's all Luca Pinelli does. That's their DNA, is just get after it, work, make plays in short sort of bursts, and then get after it again. And if the first play doesn't go in, you chase the puck into the corner and you go get it again, right? That's sort of who they are. I think he's still got a chance to at least be a really good AHL player. I'm not sure whether he'll ever be a full-time NHLer. But I like Luca a lot. Great kid, hard worker, awesome sort of DNA off the ice. I think that's also something that Yarmo and his team often sort of coveted, was just the, I mean, you see it in Sillinger, you see it in Gavin Brindley, you see it in Luca Pinelli. You go through the years of them drafting, I think they did care about the character component. So a lot of really good kids in the group. And Pinelli's one of those kids who's going to, whether he makes it or not, he's going to get the most out of his career. He's going to take it as far as he can take it. And he's going to sort of give it his all in the AHL kind of thing. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with him and sort of where he's at 2 or 3 years from now, and whether he can sort of work his way into the call up conversation in his sort of mid-20s. I think that's the path he's going to have to take.
Scott, is there any sense on Brindley and how much longer he's going to spend at Michigan? Is he going to go for a third year, or do you think he's 2 years now? What's likely, if there's any sort of talk out there on him?
Yeah, it's interesting. I spoke with him a little bit about it at the World Juniors, and he kind of played coy, and I was just trying to read sort of how he was playing it and try to see whether I could infer. The coaching staff told me a year ago that he was the most improved player in all of college hockey as a freshman from the start of the year to the end of the year. And if you watched him play this year, I think there's a case you could make that he's one of the most improved college players in college hockey for a second year in a row. He just seems to get better and better and better and make a greater and greater impact. And I would probably argue that a third year isn't the end of the world for him. I know some of those kids are really eager to make that jump, and he probably believes, because he's one of the best players on a top program, that he's ready for it. And he probably is ready for it. But I think in his case, there shouldn't be any rush. And you don't want to put him in a situation where he's in a fourth line role in the AHL next year either, right? So he's an interesting one. Coincidentally, he can actually play the checking role really well because of how hard he works and because of how dynamic his skating is. So I think that's actually going to potentially help him as he tries to get into the NHL. He's not a top six or bust player. He could start in a bottom six in the NHL and work his way up and be really effective in that role, I think. But I don't know. I don't have a strong sense for what he's going to do or a strong sort of opinion on what is best there. I think he could turn pro and I think he could go back, and I wouldn't begrudge either of those decisions.
Yeah. Kristen Kuhlman, this is from George M. He seems to have dropped down the prospect list. I think you've got him at 11. Not an easy transition to the pros for Kuhlman, coming out of Wisconsin when he did. Your thoughts on him, and is there still a shine on this player, former first-round draft pick?
Yeah, Coleman's is an interesting one. He's always been a pretty rough-around-the-edges player. I think part of that was just coming through the AJHL and not having the sort of refined game going into college that players who come through the USHL do. And I think he could have potentially even gone to the USHL for a year, which is commonly happening now, where players out of Junior A in Canada will play their draft year in Canada and then play 1 year in the USHL before making the jump to college. I think that could have benefited him. His identity and his sort of game has always been about how strong he is, very physically mature kid, can shoot a puck, can win his battles, can push you off of pucks. All of that has always been his bread and butter. The decision-making has been what's gotten him into trouble, both in college and early on in what I've seen at the pro level in Cleveland. He was also in a very tough spot, though. That Wisconsin program was an absolute mess.
Yeah.
They laid off Granato and brought in, obviously, Mike Hastings, who's very good at his job, but he was in the Granato era, and that team was one of the tougher teams to watch in college hockey. Everybody on that team seemed to underperform when they went in there. And he had a tough go, especially in his freshman year, the first half of his freshman year. He looked terrible. Like, he did not look like a first round pick. And then the second half of his freshman year, and then definitely last year, looked a lot better, still in a difficult situation. It was always going to take him some time, though. Like, going from the AJHL to the AHL in 2 years is, especially as a defenseman, that's a big, big jump. And you got to hope that you're developing really quickly in those 2 years. And I'm not sure he got that proper development with Wisconsin. So it might just be about waiting. And at this point, you're probably setting the expectations on, if he can play for us, that's a win. Like, I think you're hoping he can be a third pairing guy at this point who plays hard and scores 5 to 8 goals a year from the back end because he can shoot it and can chip in at even strength. And that's kind of what you're hoping for at this point.
Yeah. We're talking with Scott Wheeler, national prospects and NHL draft reporter for The Athletic. I've got time for a few more. Let's see. Austin H says, what is your philosophy on drafting best player available versus drafting a position of need? And if you are the Blue Jackets this year, how do you approach the draft?
I mean, it's the simplest answer is to just be saying that you should just be acquiring as much talent as you can. And that means drafting the best player on your board, regardless of position. Now, that doesn't mean that you draft 10 wingers, right? Yeah. Like, there are still premium positions. You still have to take a goalie every couple of years. You still need to prioritize center and D where you can. But I think the teams that get too carried away with that do win the war. I think oftentimes, if you look back at recent drafts, I think that the players who are most often the ones who rise the most, quote unquote, rise the most post-draft are often wingers. And they're often 5'10" or 5'11". So I do think you got to be careful not to get too carried away with size and position. Obviously, still matters. The teams that have won the last few Stanley Cups, look at Vegas, look at Tampa, look at St. Louis. They were big teams. It is a thing. It can't be ignored. But I do think that on each of those teams, who were some of the most valuable players? And it was William Karlsson on Vegas last year, right? Like, you go down the list, they've all got those guys as well. You've got the Braden Points and the Nikita Kucherovs and the Anthony Cirellis. These guys are all 5'11". So that's a piece of it. I do think you can find value if you're not too honed in on position. But you still, it's still a factor, and it has to be at least a little bit of a factor. Teams win down the middle and on D. Like that's tried and true for 100 years, basically. So, yeah, I tend to be a little bit higher on wingers than actual NHL clubs are in terms of putting together my list. So that's a part of the process for me. I like to try to find value in some wingers. But beyond that, it's I don't read too much into it. As far as the Blue Jackets and their process this year, I don't know whether they should have much of a process. Obviously, I talked about a center, and I did see a question in the chat here about when I mentioned that there's no number one center coming, was that including Adam Fantilli, who's already graduated? And the answer there obviously is no. I think Adam's got a real chance to be that. But there isn't another center behind him coming outside of Gavin Brindley, who may end up on the wing, really. So, that's I think you could prioritize that even after taking Fantilli. You could continue to prioritize center if you are trying to sort of fill a void in the pool. They've got some wingers coming. They've got good depth on D. I mentioned Yurecek and Matejchuk, but I think Stanislav, and we talked about Kuhlmans, but I think Stanislav Vozil's got a chance to become an NHL defenseman as well. Now, you can't have 4 or 5 young defensemen on your roster all at once, and I think that Matejchuk and Yurecek are going to get prioritized, which could be a bit of tough luck for a player like Zvozil, but I like Zvozil. So they've got depth on D coming for sure. But they've also got, they've got talent up front too. And they've prioritized that with Marchenko and KJ and Adam and Gavin's coming, and Gavin's going to be a player and all of that. So I don't think they really need to worry all that much outside of maybe center and goaltending. I don't think they really need to worry too much about positions. I would like to, I do wonder whether they'll take a goalie fairly high this year. Like that's something I think second, if there's only 2 or 3 goalies that go in the second round every year, and this draft is similar, and there's going to be 2 or 3 goalies taken in the second round, I wouldn't be surprised if they were one of those teams.
And now, 2 pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Douglas says, Scott, we have a pretty good depth on the D core coming up. To my mind, that depth is primarily in puck moving D and hybrid scoring D, but not in defensive defensemen. Is this a reflection of the way the NHL is going, or is this more a weakness in our defensive prospects?
Oh, that's a good question. Okay. I think it's a testament to the way that it's going. It's trending that way. Like all 6 guys need to move it. And you still have, you look around the league, there's still definitely the odd sort of classic defender. And by that, I mean, look at a Brandon Carlo in Boston.
Sure.
Even a couple of the D that they have in Vegas. I mean, Nick Hag can really shoot it. So he's got offense from his shot, but Nick Hag sort of reminds of the way that teams used to build their D cores. But by and large, all 6D on good teams around the NHL can move it and can play on offense. And if someone goes down, one of your power play quarterbacks go down, typically nowadays teams have 3 or 4 guys in their top 6 that have played on a power play their whole lives and have been power play guys at lower levels and that kind of a thing. And I think that's the way that the game is going. Scoring is up. We all know that. I touched on the sort of goons and the enforcer earlier, and the way that rosters are now being constructed up front is definitely much different than it was even 10 years ago. But I think the same is slowly starting to happen on defense as well. And I think you look at even the sort of quote unquote offensive defensemen that they have. I think Denton Mateychuk and David Yurecek are going to be able to defend, for example. So it's not as though those guys are going to be liability just because they're offensively inclined. It's not as though they're going to be liabilities in their own zone. So it's by committee. It's a five-man unit to play defense in today's NHL. And I think that as a result of that, there's just a little bit more guys who are offensively tilted.
Yeah, and Yurecek is in the American Hockey League right now learning to play defense and play without the puck. That's really what they're working on with him. Excuse me. Let's see. Nicole says, has the missed development year for 2000 and 2001 seriously affected the quality of prospects in the last few drafts and maybe even the 2024 draft? Are we getting over COVID?
Yes, absolutely. It is still impacting players. I think you can tell the most pronounced version of that has been in the OHL. This has been really 3-4 consecutive drafts in the OHL where the first overall pick, let alone, or I should say a top five pick, let alone a first overall one, isn't coming out of the OHL. Like the star players who were in minor hockey during COVID who've come through the OHL since are absolutely behind. And that's because the OHL didn't get up and running like the WHL and the USHL and even the QMJHL did. And certainly the leagues in Europe. I mean, the J20 level in Sweden, they played on. They never stopped playing. And I think that was those two lost seasons in the OHL were a big, big deal, not just for the kids who were in the OHL when it happened, but for the kids who were in minor hockey. I'm up here in Toronto here. Minor hockey shut down in Ontario as well. So kids didn't get their 14 and 15 year old seasons, which are huge, huge, huge development leagues, especially now when body contact isn't even starting until 13, 14 in Ontario. So, it's still having an impact. Even players like Callum Ritchie, for example, is a Colorado first round pick from last year who was one of the better players coming out of the OHL in last year's draft. Callum looks like he's taken a massive step this season, a bigger step than people expected. And I think that is just catch up, that he was just behind a year ago. So it's definitely still impacting the draft classes, but especially so here in Ontario, I think.
Last question for you, Scott. Thanks for doing this, my man. Tyler Pettle, the last pick in the draft last year, 224 overall. Some would call him Mr. Irrelevant. I will not. traded from Drummondville to St. John this year. But even that trade, he's not had a great year. He had 24 goals, 41 points last year. He's at 9-11-20 right now through 45 games. What's up with Tyler Pettle? I certainly, don't expect too much from a guy who goes late in the seventh round, but you get drafted by the NHL, you're a pretty good player. What is your understanding as to what's going on with Pettle, if anything, or if this is just a down year?
Yeah, he's an interesting one. He's one of those kids that was so good and so threatening in minor hockey that I was hearing about him in minor hockey, which isn't honestly a level that I pay a ton of attention to unless you're Bedard or Shane Wright or that ilk, right? So
yeah.
He's a kid who was a top prospect coming into the QMJHL, scored a ton of goals in his rookie season, looked like he was going to go from being a 30-goal guy to a 40-50 goal guy in the league. And then right in the middle of that, really in his draft year, he went from being a sort of 5'9", 5'10" skill guy, and he had a big growth spurt. And I believe, I don't have it in front of me, but I think he's like 6'1 or 6'2 now. And it's been a struggle for him to sort of still play at that size, play the skill game. It's just a little bit harder. I think part of it has been coaching and coaches trying to turn him into more of a push and pop shooting checker type as well, a player who will get after it. I don't think he has sort of makeup to play that game. Skating is an issue for him. So I think I've written about this a little bit, but he's a player who I've often argued just needs to sort of commit to being a one-dimensional scorer and be that guy instead of trying to be the sort of third line checker. I'm just not sure that that's ever going to really work out for him. But it's been interesting to see his game change. He's playing a very different style. It's almost like he's a different player. He's playing a very different style now than when he first broke into the queue. So he's still sort of at least worth peripheral interest, but he's got a long way to go as a result of this season. He was a guy who when I asked a scout with the Blue Jackets about him after the draft and sort of what they saw, why they liked him, they thought they might be able to work with him, like just a kind of a project pick that has some talent and clearly can shoot the puck, that they thought they could turn into something more. Obviously this year has been a tough one for him though. And when you have a year where you're half a point per game in your post-draft season, if you look at the trends and the numbers in terms of projectability, it becomes almost impossible for a player like that to make the NHL, let alone even getting an entry-level contract, right? So he's going to have to prove some people wrong at this point.
Yeah. Okay, so I lied. One more question for you, because I got to ask you about this guy. He is my sleeper on the list. Every time I see Cleveland play, I go, that kid's going to make it, and nobody's going to stop him. James Malatesta.
Oh.
I mean, I think he's had a pretty good first year pro, 11 goals, 20 points with Cleveland's been in and out of the lineup because they've got too many players there. They've sort of rotated even some of their top players. Pretty decent first year pro. He's not big by any stretch. He's 5'9", but he's packed.
Yeah.
He's a thick dude and he runs people over. I think he could be a fourth line guy in the NHL, maybe in the right circumstances, a third line guy. What are your thoughts on Malatesta? I know he made your list. He's fairly far down, not a super high end skill guy by any stretch. But you like this player too.
Yeah. I mean, I remember we talked about him when he had that stellar Traverse City a couple of years ago, and he's a kid. I mentioned Brindley and Pennelly as just that sort of get after it DNA. And you can absolutely, I should have mentioned James Malatesta in that, because you can add him to that list. He is just a worker bee, tenacious, scrappy, goes to the dirty areas, finds ways to impact play. Very, very likable player. If he makes it to the NHL, I have no doubt he'll be a fan favorite for the style that he plays. Obviously QMJHL playoff MVP and Memorial Cup MVP. So back-to-back MVPs, right, when the games mattered most in junior hockey last year. There's something there. I think you're onto something in terms of fourth liner. Part of the reason he was sort of in that sort of 10, 11, 12, 13 range on my list was because they have a deeper pool than most. And I like players like Brindley and Zvozil, to make it and to sort of warrant being higher on the list than a player like Malatesta. But he's right there in that next group within their pool. And I think he's got a real opportunity. He's just fits the fourth liner, get after it, spend a shift in the offensive zone, potentially help out on the penalty kill. Like, he fits that mold. Really good skater too, which helps with the potential for him to be on a PK long-term as well. So if he can even give you a sort of 10 goals, 10 assists, 20-point player who provides some energy and some helps in your locker room with this character and stands up for his teammates and all that, that's what you're hoping for there.
Sean Corrali on the wing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. There you go. Scott Wheeler, thank you so much for doing this. I know the people enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. Great chat. Again, it's what keeps the sun coming up in Columbus, Ohio in a season like this. The future is bright. Thanks for making it a little more vivid for us with your time today.
Yeah. Cheers, Portsy.
All right. Thanks, man. All the best. And folks, thanks for listening to Front End Nationwide. We'll be back next week. Of course, next week is the NHL trade deadline. Thinking it's going to be a quiet week for the Blue Jackets, but you never really know. We'll get together probably on Wednesday. I'll have to look and see how things work out, but thinking about Wednesday, get it out of the way early in the week, not out of the way, but not too close to the trade deadline when things could be going down. Thanks so much again. We'll talk to you very soon. All the best to you. Have a great week.